that monkeys are like 85% muscle.
No way.
Oh, it's I don't crazy. Believe that.
Wow. Yeah, it's crazy. Welcome to Center Circle Live. Armin Badakian, Charlie O'Connor Clark here with the Marty Thompson Experience. I don't know what we're going to call this, but
this is very Joe Rogan-esque.
Hey, almost.
Do you guys ever see those UFOs?
Have you listened to the Tom DeLonge episode of that?
Yeah.
It's nuts. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Oh, I have actually. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is someone who has a Blink 182 Wi-Fi password, which I'm not going to tell you what it is, obviously. Yeah, it was bizarre, but like, you've really felt for Tom DeLonge in that. Like, yeah. I believed him. I really do, and I still do.
For people who don't know, can you give a quick?
Oh God. Okay. Tom DeLonge, lead singer of Blink 182, had like very gross songs and got famous from it. But then now he's started like, this like NASA adjacent project that is trying to find life on other planets and researching UFOs. Like, they just released a video that I'm going to sound so conspiratorial right now, but I think the CIA confirmed.
Yeah,
the CIA confirmed it, right? Yeah,
he's like part rock
that
star.
There is
and
a UFO. No, the what was it? A photo? A video?
It was a video.
It was
a
video with an unidentified flying object, and the CIA confirmed that they didn't know what it was.
Yeah,
but that's just that's what they said, that they didn't know what it was.
Doesn't mean aliens. But
that doesn't mean aliens.
It could be aliens.
And speaking of aliens, I mean, okay, I know you guys have all seen Jimmy the Alien from York 9 FC's supporter fandom. Have you guys seen the weird looking?
Yeah, the blow up one, right?
Kind of cool. I mean, like he's become like the sort of de facto mascot of the supporters.
Don't disparage Yorkie.
I'm not.
Okay, we got to talk about Yorkie.
We do have to talk about Yorkie.
Thoughts on that? Thoughts on how that interview turned out, Armin? I know you listened back.
Probably my best like interview I've ever done in my career. Like, I've talked to hundreds of players. Just spoke to Malik Hamilton over at Cavalry FC the following day, and to be honest, I mean, while Malik was great, it was just nothing compared to the Yorkie one.
I've never felt so threatened in an interview before, though.
Yeah, it seemed
by
like...
By Yorkie?
Yeah, well, he threatened our jobs.
He did.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
He said, you know, it's, like it's very lives. Possible that you will no longer be the host.
He was very coy about it, too. He just left.
Okay, let's talk about York 9 on the weekend.
Yeah,
what
I
a weird game that
was. That is the game to talk about off of the Sunday result. It's the most recent result. So
we got to talk about that penalty call, I think, first.
Which one? Because there were two.
The first one, the one that Tristan Borges converted. Yeah, so Abzi didn't see the ball. He had his back to Borges, and it just kind of hit. And I really fell for York 9 because at that point, you were there, Charlie, but it seemed like they had to run a play.
Yeah, it was one of, I mean, they still kind of struggled in the attacking third, especially around the box, as they have for a lot of this season. But they were doing a really good job shutting down Forge, especially Kyle Becker. He just had no space. But, yeah, it was just like that one moment that really not necessarily turned the tide, because the flow of the game was pretty much the same after that. But it just knocked them off. Like, it was an unfortunate call. I mean, I don't know if it's the right call or not. I mean, Jimmy Brennan didn't seem to think so.
Yeah, I think it's the wrong call. I understand the idea of the silhouette of a person jumping, right? And Abzi did kind of have his elbows out, but like, what is he supposed to do in that situation? You know?
Yeah. I mean, I think is the rule that the new law is that you can't like make yourself bigger, right?
Yeah, but it's something like that.
If you've got your back turned, then
as a sequel to my sort of rant against the idea of penalties deciding tournaments and championships from last week, I'm going to add a caveat. A player should not be given a penalty unless their shot is directed to goal and it's deflected with your arm or hand. Like, that should be the discretion.
Yeah.
Like, if you're sending a cross into the box and it hits somebody's arm right as you strike the cross and it's like a kind of a lateral pass, that's not a penalty.
And like, where is Tristan Borges' like header gonna go?
Dude,
like,
to
was
me,
Gasparotto there? Like, is this just gonna be cleared?
No, it wasn't
right?
really that great a chance. But
dude,
would you
to
then
me
have
a penalty should only be conceded if you've taken a shot at goal, like the trajectory is goal bound and a hand gets in the way.
But then but then we would have to extend that to tackles. Like, if you get taken down in the box in like the corner of the box.
That's the thing though, like the tackle in the box giving away a penalty is supposed to negate the idea that you can't stop somebody when they have a legitimate shot at goal. Mm-hmm. But my argument would be that if you're getting tackled at the edge of the box, like near the end line, and you're in the box, but you don't have a sight of goal at that point. Mm-hmm. Like, your next natural idea, your next natural inclination is turn and low driven cross into a center forward or whoever, or like, a penalty should be given for denial of a goal-scoring shot. It shouldn't be just given because you were in a box, no?
So what would you do then? Would you do a free kick in the box?
No, yeah.
I think I would do that.
I wouldn't even do free kick in the box. I would pull it out and right on the line. I'd use the box as a line and just be like, okay, you dribbled into the box. Good for you. You were tackled. Not ideal for you. But I'm not going to give you a free goal because you ran really fast in a straight line.
Should penalties just be harder to score? Should we do the running ones?
No. No, even I have standards.
Okay, well, good news for you, Armin. There was more penalty controversy in that game. Pretty much the last kick of the game was that penalty that was awarded to Rodrigo Gattas. Zajac maybe didn't need to take down
that one's
Gattas.
A much better call, I think.
Yeah,
that's
I
a
think
rugby
so
tackle.
Too. But then Gattas, I think that really it really summarizes the game for York 9 where they just send it wide.
Yeah, I mean,
like
Gattas,
for me, York 9 had great chances the entire game and in quality positions, but yeah, Gattas just couldn't finish.
Yeah, Gattas has been pretty clinical from the spot on a couple occasions this season, but I don't know what happened there. Like it was just one of the worst penalties I've seen. Like he just kind of stroked it way past the right
Everyone
post.
Everyone has one of those though. David Beckham had it. Lionel Messi's had it. Cristiano Ronaldo's never had it because he's good at like soccer, but other players have had it. And like, you know, it's just as clinical as Gattas is, everyone's got a miss in them at least once.
I haven't looked back, but maybe we should check the replay because that's the same net where that Forge ball kid was waving his arms behind Taron Campbell's penalty.
Oh, yeah, true.
And that was
could be.
Maybe the other worst penalty we've seen in the season.
Wow.
Then maybe we should look back at that.
Okay, we'll go back. We'll send that to the powers that be.
Could be aliens.
So, shout out to Tom DeLong on that one. Borges versus Campbell. We've got something up on campiel.ca on this. The Golden Boot race is, I guess, we're only, two games left for each? Three. Borges has 12 goals, Campbell right behind at 11, and then Malanga has nine.
Easton Garo has eight, and then Akeem Garcia, Oliver Minatel, and Marco Bustos have seven goals apiece, and that's sort of our Golden Boot race. I know you two got into a little bit of a debate over this.
Yeah. See, I think that Borges is going to be able to finish it out, but I think, Charlie, you're thinking Campbell, right?
I just think it's more of a thing that Campbell can focus on because we know that Tristan Borges isn't particularly healthy and he's got, 3 weeks or so to go before he has to play in the finals. Mm-hmm. Whereas Campbell,
could be rested, yeah.
Campbell, A, doesn't have to play cavalry twice down the stretch. B, is, as far as we know, healthy. I think he's started all but one of Pacific's games this season. And playing teams that are historically throughout the season easier to score on.
See, and I see Borges as just being, and maybe no fault to Campbell because he plays a specific role, but I see Borges as being way more attacking, has way more dynamism about it in the attacking third. Like, if you look at his stats, he's creating more key chances than almost anybody else in the league, or key passes, and more shots almost than everybody else too. And then you look at Campbell, like, he's only scored, I think all nine of his goals in the fall season have come like within the 12-yard from the penalty spot, essentially.
Oh, totally.
And I don't know, Borges, because you saw in that FC Edmonton game, he had one really nice shot, basically like through a crowd, like two defenders were kind of crossing and just like really tested Pauly in a way that it was like, what the hell was that, you know?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think you guys are, you know, pretty fair to take the two top players and like kind of pick between those two. But realistically, I mean, true CPL fans know that it's Easton Ungaro.
I mean, he scored on the weekend.
With fair respect to Dominic Malanga,
with his hip
and to Akeem Garcia and to Marco Bustos and to Oliver Minatel, respect, credit, you guys are awesome. Keep doing what you're doing. Let's be real, though. Ungaro's got two games left. One's against Pacific and one's against Cavalry.
Yeah, he has to score four goals, right?
Okay, but we're talking about Rodrigo Gattas and how, you know, clinical he is. He's also the only player to have scored the only hat-trick in the CPL this season. Now, I'm not a betting man, but if I was, and I am, I would put some money on the idea. I would put some money on the idea that we're going to see at
least
one. That
was very Will Ferrell-esque there.
You got to have at least one more hat trick, no? So,
and it's going to be Ungaro?
So let's say Ungaro versus Pacific. You know, Taron Campbell's busting it, trying to get his like last couple goals to overtake Tristan Borges. And then who slides in? Easton Ungaro. Bam.
He hasn't
Pacific
even
FC down 1-0. Where'd that come from? But it's fine. It's fine.
Down 5-0.
No, it's cool.
With five
no,
goals.
It's cool. It's cool because, you know, we're trying
that's
to
where that goes, Armin.
We're trying to get trying to get Campbell his equalizer. So Campbell keeps hustling. And then bam, Ungaro another.
So it becomes a live race in one game of two guys fighting.
Yeah, and then what stops him from scoring a hat-trick against Pacific and then scoring a hat-trick against, like, Cavalry?
Dominic Latour.
I couldn't even finish. Yeah. Couldn't even finish the sentence.
Okay, we should talk
whoever,
about that.
Yeah, whoever ends up winning the Golden Boot, it will be a well-deserved one. I think the fact that the race is so tight and it's so varied across multiple teams is a good indication of the attacking talent. That being said, Carlos Vela just broke the MLS scoring record in a single season. 34 matches, which is more matches than the CPL plays. 34 goals. Mm-hmm. That's insanity.
Yeah.
Yeah, it
That's literally a goalie game.
And 72 points, right? That's another
another
record
big record
for MLS.
Yeah. Mark Anthony Kay putting in the work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're going to have some Canadian men's national team chat coming up shortly here with Terry Dunfield.
Terry Dunfield, one soccer.
Yes, men's national team and one soccer analyst. Let's talk about HFX and Cavalry, too, because HFX, they're so good defensively, I find, but they just can't score to save their life, man. Like, it was a disappointing game to watch.
They're, what, one or two away games away from no away wins?
I think they only have one left.
One left.
Yeah. And they've had they did have the one away win, but it was in the Canadian Championship against Valor.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
they also, didn't they beat Vaughan Azzurri?
No, Vaughan. Or no, yeah, they did beat Vaughan too. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Sorry, they did have that.
Yeah, and then Vaughan beat them, technically beat them at Wanderers grounds, but they still went through on aggregate.
And that,
goals.
And that Joel Waterman goal?
Yeah, that was... Okay, I'm so glad you brought this up.
Armin just lights up.
Yo, I'm so glad you brought this up because if it's literally Zlatan scoring that goal, that's on every ESPN SportsCenter highlight reel. Like,
yes.
He didn't even touch it. It was like a spiritual guidance. The ball came in and Waterman was like, "Go, my child." And he just like... floated this perfect shot into like the bottom, like back of the net corner thing. I don't think I've ever seen a goal that looked so effortless.
Could you imagine trying to one hit a corner, kind of going back where the corner came from, and then having it with that, like being able to almost slow it down in such a way? Like it came off slow. Like it looked really good.
It was like romantic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it was the kind of goal.
Beautiful goal. That's the kind of goal. That, like, after Waterman scores it, his, like, auditory hallucination kicks in and you just hear, like, a waterfall and, like, a cell phone and, like...
Shout out to... I just had to mute my phone there.
You just hear, like, I don't know, Joe Rogan. Has anybody here done DMT? No, just kidding. It was a beautiful goal. It was a nice goal. It was criminally underrated from a criminally underrated player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you guys, but so I watched that thing on repeat, like for, I don't know, a solid three or four times, five times.
Watch
in a
it
row.
Every morning.
Yeah. Well.
Since then. Yeah. For me, Waterman, just the way that he holds the ball and the way he's been able to play in midfield, similar to the way, I guess, Zator has slotted across the back line and his versatility has maybe gone unnoticed, but.
Someone check his citizenship. He's not from this world. I would go so far as to call him an alien.
We got to talk to Tom DeLong on that one.
We do. And we are joined by former Canadian international and current One Soccer broadcaster, Terry Dunfield. Terry, thank you very much for joining Center Circle Live.
Oh, don't be silly. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to talking shop and, of course, the Canadian men's national team. And there's a couple cool... call-ups in there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So this weekend we're gearing up for Tuesday's match, Canada versus the United States. They're taking on a big rival, a North American rival, at BMO Field. It's Jonathan Osorio versus Michael Bradley. We've got a really big upcoming match, not just because it's CONCACAF Nations League, but because there's potential 2022 World Cup qualification kind of permutations that emerge. Terry, you've played against the United States. You know what it's like. Can you take us through what the emotion is in like a moment like that when you're taking on not just a regional like giant, but also a rival?
Yeah, it's almost got a derby feel to it. There's something special about playing against the U.S. and especially at the men's national team level. this week with so much at stake with El Salvador slipping up in Nations League. So now
and Panama as well, right?
Yeah, Panama as
and
well.
And Panama. So I think that it's real now that if Canada is able to get a couple of good results against the U.S., that we could make the hex. And a couple months ago, you never thought that would have been possible. So you take the emotion away for a second. Just how important it is for World Cup qualifying is so important. And then you bring in the emotion. It's something special about it. I remember getting called up for it. Gold Cup game and just the preparation building up to it, what opportunities you might have, the threats of the U.S. And as the game starts to get a little bit closer, it just, I don't know, it becomes a little bit more tense and it becomes a little bit more real. And then you're out there playing. I remember, I think my first time against the U.S. was at Ford Field in Detroit in the big NFL stadium. And you're kind of looking around at the crowd and taking it all in. And before you know it, the game starts, and probably should have checked my shoulder. I got absolutely clattered by Jozy Altidore. yeah, I'll never forget that. That was a good lesson to check your shoulder in midfield. But, yeah, there's just something about it when you're lining up in the tunnel and you're looking across. And I know a record against the U.S. isn't great, but I think the U.S. right now are just wobbling a little bit, not 100% sure on Jozy Altidore's fitness. I think Canada are firing on all cylinders. I think it means more for us for the point. Mm-hmm. A little bit suspect defensively, but I think we meet them at the right time.
Definitely. Yeah, and I think to your point about the form, it's been a while since we've even scored a goal against the United States. I think the last time was somewhere in like 2007. But that being said, matches between...
Thanks for bringing that up.
But that being said, I mean, matches between Canada and the U.S. are not, you know, easily won for the U.S. or Canada one way or the other. They're pretty tight affairs. I remember in 2013, you were playing against the United States, and you had a lot of CPL players as teammates, I think. Nick Ledgerwood was playing. Kyle Becker played that game.
Oh, really?
I think Kyle Porter made like a substitutes appearance like late in that match. So there's some esteemed alumni there alongside you, Terry. But coming up with this to this, I guess, Tuesday's match, this is a very beatable U.S. team, I would say. And especially considering, you know, how good our attacking lineup has developed into. When you're looking at it on paper, do you see this as a really, like, I guess, a prime opportunity for Canada?
And that we're at home as well.
Yeah, totally.
And we're coming off a very good series against Cuba. I think Daniil Henry will be a loss. But, yeah, I wouldn't go as far to say that we're the favorites. But I think we can be quietly confident in our game model, our attacking flair and pieces, and how dynamic our front five is. I think Pia is a great screen in that number six role, or as Canada number four role. It'll be interesting to see how our back line stacks up. I think Milan Borjan's form's been good, and I think he's gotten over quite quickly what happened at the Gold Cup. So no, I'm quietly confident. I think if it becomes an open game, I think that'll really suit Canada. And to be fair, that looking at the U.S., they were walloped against Mexico, and I think that yes, they were missing Michael Bradley. I'm not 100% sure on Jozy Altidore's status. He's getting an MRI today after coming out of the TFC game yesterday. So it's I think on paper everything's kind of shaping up nicely, and hopefully we'll see a big crowd at BMO as well. I think that's going to be important.
Oh yeah, totally.
The U.S. plays Cuba a few days before as well, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
So there's some travel. There's some, you know, other considerations to take in mind. Terry, you mentioned the back line, and I know Marty perked up on that one.
Well, we've got Didich in there.
Yeah,
Amir Didich for FC Edmonton. I think the big argument this past week was, you know, maybe some people from One Soccer as well, was Dominic Sator versus Amir Didich. I'm just curious your thoughts on his call-up and if we could maybe even see another player like Sator from the CPL in the future in that back line.
Yeah, I think the fact that we're even having this conversation is massive and a huge positive for the CPL. My own opinion is I think Sator has played a lot of time at right back for Calgary. I'd say he's on John's radar for sure, but maybe more in that right back slot, whereas Didich is an out and out center back. And with Daniil Henry out and suspended, and to be fair, depth isn't super deep at center back. I think Didic's profile of 6'4", he's a commanding center back. His pedigree is quite good. He played almost 80 games for Swope Park. He's been involved with Canadian national team setups before. So I don't think he'll be overwhelmed by it. I'm not saying Zator would be either, but I think just for a pure out-and-out center back, that Didic's profile maybe hits it a little bit more than Zator. What I like about Zator is his athleticism. But for a commanding center back, I can see why John went with Didic.
He's also a good ball-playing center back. He's got a good passing range, and I think that was one of the things that Jeff Paulus highlighted. And alongside the character of the player, he says this is a guy who gets mad in training if he makes a mistake. Like, that's kind of what you want, especially at this level.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I'd be a little bit wary of that coming into your first camp and shouting and berating all the players. But, yeah, I think accountability is important. I think in his own environment in Edmonton, he's, from what I understand, he's a little bit of a leader. Be interesting if Jeff played a little bit more football where he could play out of the back. I'm only messing. But I think both him and Zator are comfortable with the ball at their feet. I think where I'd be interested to see whether Didic can make the step up to international football is his just level of engagement throughout games and not taking the play off. And also, it's a very physical region, CONCACAF, and can he handle the Jamaican center forwards? And I know he's not going to quite come up against that, but could he handle Areola running in behind, or Zardes and his pace and power up top if he plays instead of Josie Altidore? So those would be my question mark if he is given the opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I when I talked to Didic after the call-up, he sort of entertained the idea of, you know, FC Edmonton's defender himself and Cavalry's defender Dominic Zator kind of making peace in this kind of rivalry situation and maybe potentially starting in a back line together. That would be kind of curious for me. But Terry, I mean, like, are there any other CPL players that, I mean, I know that we look at guys like Tristan Borges and you know, Taron Campbell, but I think in those positions, John Herdman sort of already has his ranks. He's got plenty of depth in those positions. But do you see any other CPL players in positions of need for John Herdman in the next couple call-ups?
I think it's going to be difficult. I think you nailed it, that the front five are so deep. And players are very good ages. They're young, that it's going to be difficult to kind of crack that. I would like to see Tristan Borges in a camp, in the right environment, to see whether he can hang with these players. And he might need to kick on from Forge. And I'm not trying. I think he's in a great place, and his profile and his game is improved for his year in the CPL. But for him to be seriously considered, I think he needs to just be playing at a higher tier level, where John might have a better comparison to some of the other players, and I think he's capable of that. I think he makes the game look easy. He's better with better players around him. He's got some nice pieces around him, to be fair, in Hamilton. But I think that I don't think you can just look at the quality of the individuals. I think when you look at national teams, you need to look at areas that Canada kind of are a little bit weaker in the depth chart. And we saw Carducci come in for Calgary in the last camp. So as long as these players too come in and really represent the league well too during training, and I think this will open the door for more opportunity as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So sort of, I guess, in a long-winded answer, I think Didic and Carducci, they're flying the flag for the whole league, and it's important that they do well.
Yeah, totally. I think the fact that they've both come out of Alberta is maybe an early indication. I'm sure both Tommy Wieldy Jr. and Jeff Paulus will be pleased that, you know, their Albertan players are getting called up. We'll see about, you know, the whole Alberta versus Ontario thing that's been sort of developing as we approach our finals. But moving along, I guess, from the Canadian Premier League, this is a big match for Canada. And I think it's also a big match because it's in Toronto and because it features two massive personalities from Toronto FC. This is the first time that Jonathan Osorio will be playing Michael Bradley as an opponent since a friendly between Roma and Toronto FC before Bradley signed.
Oh, wow.
This is a big meeting in midfield. Terry, you kind of hang around TFC camp. I know you're still doing some work with the academy there. Is there kind of a growing mood of Osorio versus Bradley in TFC camp, and what do you make of that back and forth?
I think you just started it, to be honest. So, yeah, well done. I think there's a mutual respect. I think Jonathan Osorio is a better player from learning from Michael's experiences and Michael's game. And so I wouldn't say that there's necessarily a rivalry, but I think once you cross that line on Tuesday night, both are fierce competitors. And I think that's something that flies under the radar with Jonathan Osorio, is just how much of a fierce kind of competitor he is. He's turning into a little bit of a leader. He'll understand the importance of the result, not only for World Cup qualifying, but also for galvanizing the nation behind Canada. And Canada's had, have knocked at the door a couple times, and we haven't quite hit the heights of the women's program. The Honduras 8-1 comes to mind. The recent Gold Cup, the loss to Haiti. We were on the brink of that big game against Mexico. We're just waiting for that one moment where we can really get behind this men's team. And I think that this might be an opportunity on Tuesday night to really galvanize the country. And I think Jonathan Osorio will be a big part of it. I think he'll be a pain in the ass for Michael Bradley, kind of just living on his shoulder in those half spaces, in those pockets, maybe catching Michael out in transition.
Yeah. Absolutely. And if you want to catch Jonathan Osorio slide tackling Michael Bradley while Amir Didic scores a header that wins us a game against the United States, you can buy your tickets to BMO
Field.
You've got to
stop drinking before podcast.
You can buy your tickets. I'm contractually mandated to let you know that you can buy your tickets to Canada versus the United States on Tuesday at 7:30, which is also available on One Soccer. Terry, thank you very much for joining us here today on Center Circle Live. So have either of you guys played the mystery ball mode in FIFA 20?
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
Can we talk about how incredible that mode is?
It changes the game. It's a
so
new game.
So for anybody who doesn't know, FIFA 20 just dropped. This is around the time of soccer season for the video game community. FIFA 20 just dropped, and there's this new mode, thankfully, finally, that has a mystery ball. So every time the ball goes out of play, a new ball comes in, and it has this weird kind of color gradient behind it. Like it leaves a wave of color.
Yeah.
And there's a multiplier attached to it. So you could go out for a throw in, and then your next ball is speed times two.
So it's, you can have you'll be insanely fast.
All of your players will just run.
Your passing's unbelievable. Your dribbling's really good.
Yeah,
depending on the halfway line.
Depending on what ball you get. If you get the shooting ball, you can score unreal long range distance goals. If you get the passing ball, you're making Barcelona look bad with your own version of whatever tiki taka is.
Limerick or whatever.
Invincible passes. But the thing is, it multiplies. So if you score on a speed times three, your players are ridiculously fast, but also you get three goals if you score it.
Yeah.
And so it creates these 20 to 16 score lines, but also every single throw in or every single corner or whatever is just a new opportunity to completely change the game.
Not to nerd out on, as I've already talked about Blink-182 and Aliens, but I really like how this is a game for couch multiplayer, two friends playing together.
Yeah.
And it's you never see that in games anymore. There's never any golden eye type stuff.
Yeah, this is not a competitive advantage. There's no esports players who are going to be doing tournament mystery ball mode.
You can be really bad at FIFA like I am, and you can still pull out a result.
Yeah. Speaking of FIFA 20, I don't know if you guys saw, I was in my breakdown this week, somebody on Pro Evolution Soccer,
the
new one, created a full CPL kits, player faces,
unbelievable,
fans. Shout out to that guy on YouTube. What was his name? The Wonderful Forge FC, I believe his name was.
Yeah, it was a Forge account for sure.
Unreal. The amount of time that must have gone into making that. If you haven't seen this video, go check it out on campiel.ca.
So the players walk out, they're wearing the kits. The crowd has Forge, for example, has Hamilton specific banners Forge specific banners.
He's even got the yellow Macron armbands for the captains.
Yeah, that was cool.
The detail is just insane.
Shout out to that guy for all your awesome work. We really love that. And hopefully soon we'll have an official version that we can, kick around and play for you guys. But didn't happen for FIFA 20. But, you know, next year is a new year. Who knows? Speaking of next year, guys, it's getting to be about that time where we're approaching the end of the season. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking this when I was watching Valor play and defeat FC Edmonton. We just watched a professional soccer match. Say what you want about the, you know, permutations, the fall standings, whatever. We watched a professional soccer match in October between a team from Winnipeg and a team from Edmonton.
Life is good.
And it didn't snow. Good. I'm just kidding. But yeah, it's surreal. So in that spirit, I will open it up to you guys. Expansion cities. We haven't really heard too much about expansion, but I imagine it'll heat up soon. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What other two Canadian cities would you love to see take one another on, and why?
Oh, interesting. Okay, so two cities.
Yeah, it's got to be two new cities that we're not in.
Okay, I have one that would be really strange, but it would probably be pretty cool and unique. I think it would be really great if there was like a proper northern derby between like Yellowknife and Whitehorse.
You say cool. And yeah. It's
very, very cold.
Very, very cool.
They oh, it's 15 like, in July? Perfect.
Like, I don't know if you guys saw the... The there's an article I read about the soccer league in Greenland.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
the teams like get together.
There was
together
a documentary on this, yeah, isn't there?
Yeah. And they get together and it's this little pitch and there's like kind of these mountains all around that the fans sit on.
Yep.
And there was a great, I think, Copa 90, I think. Is that how you yeah. said that? Yeah. They did a great piece
video
on
series.
Yeah, on in none of it.
Yeah.
Specifically,
yeah.
and followed that team. It was like futsal, but it was so interesting because mm-hmm. they're saying, oh yeah, there's tons of teams up here. Like yeah. there's tons of kids that are playing. And playing with an orange ball outside in the snow.
Expand to like Anchorage, Alaska as well. And
Tundra
just have like
FC.
A international cup tournament. What about you, Marty? Who do you got?
That's interesting. I think I want to go to Saskatchewan. I think I want to see Saskatoon and Regina.
Nice.
Oh.
Toontown, obviously, it's such a fun city. And I feel like, well, with the way that they've proven themselves out there in the last couple summers with those matches they played against Toronto FC, two, I believe, this past summer. I think it's just such a cool spot, and there's tons of football out there. There really is, and a great mm-hmm. appetite for it, and I think that they're ready for it, to be honest.
Mine would probably be anything between Ontario and Alberta. So let's
we have
say,
that, though.
I know, but I want more of it.
Okay,
fair.
I want York 9 and Forge and
Huntsville.
Nah.
Kingston. Not,
nah, Pickering. That's where I'm from.
Oh, true, yeah.
Pickering,
yeah,
Ajax, Whippy. I want Durham region, like east side Toronto, versus like Red Deer.
Yeah. Or like I was thinking.
Or
I was Banff.
Thinking, Banff
would
be
sick.
Oh, yeah,
Banff would be very cool.
Banff would be sick.
That would
sick.
Be pretty cool.
Yeah. Make it happen. Powers that be. I don't know. I don't know if it's ever going to happen, but Banff would be an incredible away trip.
So I've been talking to
on skis.
I've been talking to a couple of the supporters groups out in, well, for FC Edmonton and for Cavalry, and they're talking about the Wild Rose Cup, which is something that's going to be awarded officially on the 19th, mm-hmm. the final El Clasico. And they said to me specifically, they want it to be like the Cascadia Cup.
Yeah,
they said
they
that's their goal.
Yep.
Right.
And I don't know, you put another team in there and all of a sudden it's a 3-team tournament. Like that would be unbelievable for the sport. Like even if Red Deer or Lethbridge, like something like that.
Yeah.
Would be great.
And if you have one of those smaller towns, they probably can kind of harness that whole we're the small town vibe going up against these bigger cities. Mm-hmm. That works a lot. I like that.
Yeah, and it's prevalent at West. Mm-hmm. Like people really support the town.
I mean, whatever city is chosen, ultimately it's the beauty of this sport is the potential for, you know, small communities to make it to that first division. So I know that promotion relegation isn't a reality right now, but the commissioner has spoken pretty favorably about, you know, wanting to implement it at some point, where it's very possible in 10 years, let's say, that we'll be looking at a world where the Wild Rose Cup is awarded to a series of Albertan teams, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. It's Ontario's equivalent would probably be the Trillium Cup. I don't know, like...
How do we get that for the 905 Derby?
How do we get the Trillium Cup back? Like,
have to buy it, maybe?
Didn't Toronto win it this year from Columbus?
Yeah.
I think they got
they
it.
Did,
I think
yeah.
so.
Yeah.
The one place we haven't really talked about, which we probably should, is Quebec.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Quebec City would be
Quebec
great.
City versus
Quebec
Laval.
City would be a great away trip.
Yeah. Trois-Rivières has a great history.
Realistically, if you open up kind of the world of of Canadian soccer to promotion relegation, where any city can have any club, presumably, Quebec is just going to run wild. Like, mm-hmm. these guys have talent in abundance. And I think that's definitely, like, the reason I think we didn't bring it up is because I think it's more of like a foregone conclusion for us at this point that something will happen in Quebec. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, man, we'll keep our fingers crossed for all of these communities across Canada. You know, like, the beautiful thing about the CPL in year one was that it opened our eyes to places like Calgary and Edmonton and Winnipeg and Halifax and Victoria. And these are not small cities.
No.
You know? No. These are major metropolises across the country. And I think a lot of fans learn something about each one of these cities that maybe they didn't know before.
You know? I didn't really know anything about Vancouver Island.
I didn't know anything about, like, Victoria. I didn't know Halifax was such a party city. I didn't know that people in Calgary dress so nicely, like, vests every day. And so, like, you know.
I don't know who you're talking about. But.
So, you know, I think the more and more this league grows, the more we're going to enjoy the fruits of learning about the rest of our country in a way that really only soccer can teach us. I mean, how many of us realistically know much about places like, you know, Belgrade, where Milan Borjan plays, or like, you know, any, like, those random cities in, like, Luton Town in England? Like,
right, yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of rich kind of culture that soccer kind of elevates and presents to the rest of the world, and Canada's right on the doorstep of that. So whether it's in Quebec, whether it's in Saskatchewan, whether it's Ontario versus Alberta a little bit more, or even if we end up north, I think the more this grows, the more it's going to be pretty darn awesome to see it come.
While we're on that, shout out to Disgruntled Supporter Section. They're like a CampYell group that's based in Yellowknife, I believe.
Ooh,
wow.
And they've been, they're quite active on Twitter. They're great. I think it's awesome. Yeah, and they're, like, that's very really cool. Specifically northern. So, okay, Charlie, who's winning between Whitehorse and Yellowknife? Game one.
I have no idea.
Wow. Why do
I think it's a draw.
What do we pay
you
for?
That's fair.
You have no idea. It's your job to know, my guy.
Okay.
I'm going to say Whitehorse just because clearly their 4-3-3 is more effective than Yellowknife's 4-2-3-1. And also, like, you know, Di Rosario, head coach of Whitehorse, he's done a great job up there. Okay, that's enough. Let's call this an episode then.
Okay, we'll see you next week.
In Whitehorse.
Yeah, or Yellowknife.